The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Zen Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Case 20 from the Book of Serenity, Dijong's Nearness. Dijong asked Phayon, "Where are you going?" Phayon said, "I am wandering about on pilgrimage." Dijong said, "What is the purpose of your pilgrimage?" Phayon said, "I don't know." Dijong said, "Not knowing is most intimate." So entering into this training period, entering into this session, we do our best to stay still. We do our best to show up wholeheartedly, as Michael was saying about the chanting. Our practice of Zen is not an intellectual exercise, but rather a whole-bodied, whole-hearted, whole person practice. And so our kneecaps and our belly buttons and our elbows do zazen, our ears and our throats and a whole body. And this wonderful koan from the Book of Serenity, a dialogue between a teacher and a student. Dijong is the teacher, and Phayon has come for an interview. Part of the backstory is that Phayon didn't intend to go to Phayon for an interview, but got caught in a snowstorm. He thought he had other places to be, but he ended up right there, just as you have ended up right here. And so the teacher inquires of the student. The teacher asks this wonderful question, "Where are you going? Where are you going? Where am I going in the middle of this life, in the middle of this time that we have all dedicated to so-called practice? Where are you going? Where are you headed? What's up?" All of these Zen dialogues begin some way. Somebody asks a question, somebody gets the ball rolling, someone says something. And in Zen, we value greatly responding to what is. Although we emphasize this stillness and silence, the point of the stillness in our zazen is to practice a kind of responsiveness that is beyond merely reactivity. The pattern of being comfortable, of avoiding discomfort, is so deeply ingrained that we spend much of our time trying to avoid what we don't like and get more of what we do like. And on one level, there's no problem with this. When you can get comfortable, when you can be where you want to be, that's a wonderful thing. But of course, we all know that discomfort and suffering and difficulty are unavoidable. Sometimes we get what we want Sometimes we get what we don't want. And our Zen practice is practicing a kind of open-hearted responsiveness to whatever appears before us, a cold day or a warm day, lots of energy, no energy. Our practice is to find our way, and we find our way not by planning in advance what we're going to do, but learning how to be present, we might say, how to follow what is arising. And so the teacher asks, where are you going? And Fayan reports, I am wandering about on pilgrimage. Fayan lived in the early 10th century, and during that time of Chan, of Zen, it was common for students, after they had completed some degree of study with one teacher, to wander from teacher to teacher. And if you were an ordained monk, when you showed up at a monastery, they would have to take you. And so people did wander about on pilgrimage. And on some level, each of us, every human being, is wandering about. We all have our plans and our hopes, and we may think we know where we're going. But the path of your life, the path of my life, is beyond what you can imagine. It is beyond what you can plan. Again, not that planning is bad or dreaming. What is your dream for your life? Take a step toward that, live that now. We are wandering, and we find ourselves only and ever to be exactly where we are. And we can make up a reason, well, I'm here because I did this or they did that. But that's all after the fact, and there are an infinite number of causes and conditions that have led us all to this particular moment. And this particular moment, of course, is not a tiny dot on a long line that extends before and after. This moment itself is your life. Your only life. So Fayan says, I am wandering about on pilgrimage. And pilgrimage, for me, such a wonderful idea, or this thought that a pilgrim is someone who leaves home, who travels out into the world on some sacred mission. Sometimes, in fact, often for pilgrims, there is some definition. I'm going to make a pilgrimage to the Holy Land. I'm going to make a pilgrimage to the ancient Chan temples in China. We set out and we leave home. In the Celtic tradition of pilgrimage, there is this image of setting out in a round boat with no paddle. You set out on your pilgrimage by getting in the boat and pushing offshore, and then wherever the tides and the winds blow you, that is the destination of your pilgrimage. And I'm reminded of a wonderful story about a Zen teacher who was an archery expert. And he was at Esalen in the 60s or 70s. And he announced that he would be giving an archery, a Zen archery demonstration that evening by the edge of the cliffs overlooking the Pacific Ocean. And so everyone that evening gathered, and he was dressed formally with his long bow. And he sat in seiza for some length of time, and then he stood up and picked up the long bow, put an arrow in, and pulled back the string, aiming the bow, aiming the arrow out over the ocean. And held that moment in full aliveness, holding and holding. And at some point, he let the arrow go, and the arrow flew out into the ocean, far, far out into the ocean. And he turned to the assembled crowd, and he said, "Bullseye, bullseye, exactly right." You and I, of course, are like that arrow. We have been shot out of our mother's womb to exactly the right place through the ups and downs, the difficulties and the triumphs, exactly right here the whole time, bullseye. And so this notion of pilgrimage, wandering on pilgrimage, is a strange thing to say, because usually there's some destination, trying to get to the holy site, to get to the holy land. But to say wandering on pilgrimage for me shows some kind of insight. If every place is sacred, if every moment the Dharma is here, if, as Dogen says, the true way circulates everywhere, not one of our steps leads away from it, then each step on the pilgrimage, each step on the journey is the destination. And the place we are seeking is right here. Wandering about on pilgrimage. And the teacher, Dijang, pushes him a little bit, says, "What is the purpose of your pilgrimage?" He might have said, "What is your intention for this pilgrimage?" Again, looking deeply, what is it you really want? Where are you headed? Why go to all of this bother? And as Melissa said yesterday, this is a wonderful question to continue to, we say, clarify the bodhicitta, to clarify the longing. This bodhicitta, the energy of the alive energy of the heart mind, so important in this practice, because although this practice is simple and in some ways quite easy, it demands so much. As Hakuin said in one of our readings earlier, because it is so very important, it does require some degree of suffering. As we sit, we are having to hold fast against the current of habit force, the current of the delusion of separateness of the mind, so deep and has such a grip on us, so difficult to discern. that it does require some clear intention. What is it you want? Where are you going? And Fayan could have said many things. He might have said, "I am seeking awakening. I want to be a Buddha. I want to be close to my life." But Fayan says famously, "I don't know." In Chinese, the way it's written, there are no pronouns, so the actual characters are no knowing. So he might have been saying there is no way of knowing, but I kind of like this, I don't know. Because this place, this not knowing, is a place that is so important, because we only know what we have experienced up until this point. We only know what we have imagined. Life and this world and the path of Zen is inviting us moment after moment to step beyond, to take the courageous and dangerous, we might say, step of leaving behind everything you have learned. I vividly remember my first years of Sesshin, where for me the practice was trying to string together periods of concentration, and I would work so hard to try to stay with it and not veer away, and felt like I was trying to gather something together, and I would gather and gather, and then of course at some point it falls apart. Only over many years did I begin to learn that this practice of Sesshin is not about some kind of trajectory that you have to watch and maintain and make sure you're going deeper and going deeper, but rather this uncontrollable ride of being in this moment. And what we're practicing is not this ascent up the hill and you don't want to slip back, but rather a practice of letting things be and letting yourself be. Noticing when you start accumulating, noticing when you start keeping score, noticing when you have wandered off into the fog, and then allowing that to be as well. The wonderful thing about Sesshin and about our practice, and I suppose about our life, is that you don't have to know what you're doing. In fact, you cannot know what you are doing. The Dharma is wonderful and weird and wild and incomprehensible. As Dongshan said, cannot be faced or turned away from. We are looking for what is already here. We are already awake, trying to wake up. And yet something is required of us. Vow, we recite our bodhisattva vows over and over. Dharma gates are endless, I vow. To enter them, greed, anger, and ignorance rise endlessly. I vow to abandon them. This vow, I think, is required to bring ourselves fully into the moment, to have this kind of determination. One of the three pillars, we say, of Zen, faith, determination, and doubt. Faith, of course, not in the sense of believing in these three things or four things or believing in anything, but faith meaning the willingness to step into what we don't know. This willingness, we might even say, to die to this moment again and again. Whatever you have, whatever you think you have, even if what you have is nothing, this nothing requires letting go. And so Phaon says, I don't know. And in this I don't know, he echoes the great I don't know of Bodhidharma in his meeting with the emperor, when the emperor says, who are you standing here before me? And Bodhidharma said, I don't know. And this place of not knowing, when we lose the grip of certainty, a very challenging place. Sometimes it can sound so wonderful, and sometimes it is, but sometimes as we begin to feel the loosening of certainty, the loosening of our sense of who we are, it can be very challenging. And at these times, one of the reasons we emphasize body and breath so much, you cannot think your way beyond your ego. You cannot think your way into waking up. You cannot plan it. But you can enter into this space. You can, we might even say, make yourself available. Several of us last evening talked about curiosity, about moving into what is this? And that curiosity is a version of doubt, I think, of what is this? What is going on? Faith is not about believing in the teachings of Zen. Faith is about courage and willingness to step forward. And doubt is not about some kind of this couldn't be true and this is all stupid. That may be a kind of cynicism. But doubt, a great wondering. Who am I really? Who is the one who is listening to this talk? Who is the one whose knees are uncomfortable? Who is the one who is inquiring? Right? We all get to a point and get to points in our life where we run out of options, where there is no way forward. Oftentimes we back quickly out and think that must be some mistake. Let me see if there is some way around. And there is no way around. So high you can't get over it. So low you can't go under it. So wide you can't get around it. Just this. So Phaon says, I don't know. And Di Zhang, the teacher, says famously, not knowing is most intimate. Some translations say not knowing is nearest, closest, but not knowing is most intimate. So this place where opinion drops away, where it, in some ways orientation drops away. So often in talking about meditation, people talk about the importance of being grounded. And in Zen, we talk about the importance of posture and the being present in the body, but grounded for me often carries a connotation of oriented. I know where I am here sitting. But I think as we practice, there is the possibility to get closer and closer to our experience. And when we get closer to our experience, the smelling, the tasting, the sensation, the seeing, and even the thoughts, in Buddhist psychology, thinking is another sense, the sixth sense. Thoughts arise in the mind. We say my thoughts, but of course we have no idea where they come from or why at one moment these thoughts are appearing and at the next those thoughts are appearing. Not knowing is most intimate. When opinion begins to deteriorate, we might say, when we run out of options, when something happens as we walk this path, there is an intimacy as what comes is what comes, and we begin to see, to sense, to taste for ourselves this possibility of living a life beyond this kind of sorting for good and ill, a life that is free from the fetters of having to be comfortable all the time. We can cultivate this basic kindness towards ourselves and towards what is arising. And it doesn't mean we have to like it. So when dislike arises, we can be appreciative of that. This is how it is for us human beings. Sometimes we really don't like what's happening. But we, as we move closer, we can see both like and dislike have no substance. Like and dislike arise. Like, dislike, and we might say also neutral. So many things arise that we don't particularly like, we don't particularly dislike. This is actually the second foundation of mindfulness in the sutras. First foundation, awareness of body and breath. Second foundation is noticing this constant arising. And the point of noticing is not to suppress or pretend or ride over, but to enter into this life of joy and sorrow. And as we begin to close the gap, we say, between ourself and ourself, then we can begin to enter into the liveliness of the moment, and we say we touch and are touched. The self and the world meet and create each other. This a wondrous teaching of dependent co-arising, at every moment happening in the ears, we call it hearing, in the eyes, we call it seeing. But this creative activity, Lin Shi called it the wondrous functioning of Buddhas, is your wondrous functioning. The wondrous functioning of your body, the wondrous functioning of the consciousness that thinks it is so sure it is separate, and so sure that it needs things to be how they should be. And how dare you say that to me, or how dare you treat me like that? The little self arises in all its pain and delusion. And in this arising of the little self, we get an opportunity to see how it functions, to see how we are in bondage. The arising, the reactivity, is not the problem. It is not what we are fighting against. Fighting reactivity only creates more reactivity. But in this softening that happens through our practice, in this softening that happens through our life, there is this possibility of being worn down, of being worn out. And this possibility that your life is doing itself just perfectly. I remember so vividly in my life coach training many years ago, they said, don't try to fix your clients. Don't try to give good advice, because human beings are naturally creative, resourceful, and whole. Your job as coach is to be curious about how your client is going to solve their problems. And we might take this attitude toward ourselves. We might take this attitude toward our zazen, toward working on koans. What if you don't have to figure it out? This might be a kind of faith. What if you let yourself be? What if you did not have to be a good Zen student and make sure you got the teacher's approval? What if you could be wilder than that? What if you could enter in with this curiosity, this open-hearted curiosity? Of course, there's some kinds of curiosity that I'm going to figure this out so I can fix it. But I think the kind of curiosity we're talking about is more an appreciation. This is life in the form of confusion and disappointment. This is life in the form of ease and spaciousness. This is life in the form of dot, dot, dot. And the cost of entry into the fullness of this life is your opinion of how it should be, your opinion of how you should be. So this is the invitation of practice. This is the invitation of life calling to each one of us. So Dijong asked Fayan, "Where are you going?" Fayan said, "I am wandering about on pilgrimage." Dijong said, "What is the purpose of your pilgrimage?" Fayan said, "I don't know." Dijong said, "Not knowing is most intimate." Thank you. Please sit comfortably, and we'll move into our Dharma dialogue. As usual, raising your Zoom hand and will call on you, and Michael and Melissa and I will respond. Matt or Deb?
And thanks for the talk, David. I think I just want to comment on this phenomenon so often when I'm listening to Taisho's Dharma talks. It's like this little dance in my mind. I'm listening, I'm trying to make sense of it. I go off, I come back, I make a judgment about what I just did. Oh, then I come back. Oh, am I doing? It's just sort of a, you know, and what do I take in? I don't know. But it's sometimes it's discouraging, and sometimes it's just, oh, this is where I am. But it does, you know, the mind is just has a mind of its own. So thank you.
Indeed. Yeah. What are you looking for in listening to a Dharma talk? What's this? The description you did was wonderful. I can really relate to it. But I'm curious about what you're moving against. You know, what's the wish here?
Yeah. It's well, I think that's kind of the thing. It's so hard to put my finger on it because I'm wanting to stay present with it, and then I'm off a little. And then I'm off about being off, and then I come back, and I guess that's this mind listening and trying to be open, because it's so accustomed to you know, creating little boxes and creating, you know, that are these little illusions of refuge. You know, and safety, and there's, you know, there's this there's a real vulnerability that is being kind of protected against in some ways, not this forgetting of just the freedom of just releasing into that and just letting it be. So I don't know.
Oh no, yeah, thank you for saying I don't know. But what a clear demonstration of the very thing that the koan's about, you know, and these expectations we have as educated people in the West who are used to comprehending things. Mm. And comprehending, as you say, means putting things in boxes. And there's something very comforting in that kind of knowing. And so to be free in receiving whatever happens in a Dharma talk, whatever happens in a Taisho, it's not the way we've been trained. It's really, really uncomfortable, and it exposes our vulnerability, as you so beautifully showed us. So I just love that this is our starting point for our first Dharma dialogue, Matt. I think we'll keep moving into this territory together. Really, thank you so much.
Thanks.
Matt, as you began talking, I just, in my head, I'm thinking, what a beautiful expression of wandering about on pilgrimage.
Yes. Bix.
Yeah, thank you for the talk. And thank you, Matt, for what you just said, because it really ties into what was also coming up for me, which was sort of this needing to be a good Zen student, like you mentioned in your talk, David. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I really wish that I was, you know, more concentrated. I wish I wasn't so I wish my concentration was better. I wish I could, you know, just be in samadhi, whatever I'm doing. And then I don't know, it's nice to I had a moment in the beginning of the talk of just sort of letting go of that. And letting go of like the need to figure it out or, you know, be good or something. And I'm hoping to bring that into the rest of Sisheen.
Yeah. And there are these moments, and it's so paradoxical because, you know, it's something is required of us, but yet the way we've been taught about working harder, being good, and piling it up and accumulating it, of course we try that, we have to. And you know, good for you. I want to be a good Zen student too. And then as we sit over time, as we bring awareness to this, we don't get rid of it, right? But there are these moments where maybe it begins to lose its grip on us. And there's a, we get these moments, this tip of the tongue taste. Ah, yes. And then the danger is like, okay, I'm going to put that in a box and I'm going to try to put more of those in my box till my box gets really big. And then, you know, like Matt was saying, and like you're saying, this is about letting things be, even these things we really don't like, right? Like, so the problem with my Zen is that I want to be a good Zen student. So I'm going to stop that. And so the great resource you have, Bix, one of the many that you have, is that you want to get it right. You really want to do it. You don't want to be a dilettante, right? How wonderful. And of course you do it wrong, right? We all do it wrong. But in that doing it wrong, this coming back again and again and being present with it all, it sorts itself out. The Dharma sorts out the Dharma. The Dharma understands the Dharma. You do not do it. I do not do it. Yeah.
You know, I'm so struck by both what you said, Bix, and what Matt said around how the ego arises and kind of gets in the way of everything. And in pop culture Buddhism, you're supposed to transcend the ego, you know, get rid of it. But what I understand about it is that the ego exists for a very good reason, many, many really good reasons. And so to befriend this quality of, I want this, I only wish if it were only like this, and then we say, oh, so I let go. And then we make a new box that we're gonna carry through for the rest of Sisheen or the rest of our life. Just to see the arising of that wish. You know, that was what Matt kept saying. I wish, I wish, I want, I. And I did this, and I'm now this kind of student. So not to try to get rid of it, because that's the pop culture version, but to engage with it, to meet it, to really say, what is this? Mm-hmm. And here it is again, and here you are again, you beautiful sense of self and ego that has allowed me to get this far in my life. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. But now I'd like you to be my companion and not be in control of everything. That's a readjustment around I wish, I want, and look at me, I'm so wonderful, and look at me, I'm so terrible. This is where we're heading when we're wandering around on pilgrimage. We appear to be sitting still, but everybody at Sisheen is wandering around, right? Including, of course, you know this, you and me. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Bix. Susan.
Thank you for your talk. At some point today, I'm not quite sure whether it was in the first sit we had, in the very first sit, or before that, when I was here on the island on my motor scooter, I had a sense of practice is one surprise after the next, after the next, after the next. It is just, And it was wonderful to see this. Mm. And when I was listening or watching the recording from last night, and Melissa, you asked about our intention. So, and I know this was on my scooter this morning. When I'm on my scooter, I'm not thinking about something. I don't try to solve something, or it's just I'm on my scooter and there is something beautiful with that. Mm-hmm. And when I'm not grasping or looking or so, things are really coming to me. This is a sense of coming to me. Mm-hmm. And in terms of my intention, it was very clear that this space we are creating here together is so important for me as my practice space,
Yeah.
And I really don't know what needs to happen that I would be willing to let go of this practice space because it is so important to me. Stop here.
Yeah. Well, I loved where you started about the surprising nature of practice. We say the Dharma is inexhaustible, and you've been to one or two other retreats, as I recall, as I have myself, right? And yet still, every time, I think you're really speaking about that possibility of entering that not as a problem. This is not about, well, I want to make sure I know what's going to happen. But this is kind of going on the scooter of our life, and the possibility that it comes to us. The Sesshin will teach us exactly what we need. The Dharma talk will give us exactly what we need. We don't have to make sure we get the right thing. But appreciating this openness to, all right, and this kind of valuing this, the openness of this space. So really appreciate you naming that, Susan. Yeah, thank you.
And I might also add, Susan, in the spirit in which we're all talking, maybe you don't need to let go of valuing this right now. It's here. This is where you're living. How beautiful. Someday, probably in a few days, you'll have to let go of this particular form. But I think that'll happen for you. Just as you say, you know, things come to you when you're not reaching for them. That's the fundamental teaching of the way we receive these teachings. So right now you're receiving this beautiful appreciation of this practice space that we're all making together, and how lovely. No need to get rid of it, no need to let go of it until it's time, and then it will go, and then some other surprising thing will happen. Thank you.
Jenny.
Thanks for the talk, David. Yeah, I just been for my whole Dharma career, kind of, and also recently, just like wanting to be able to explain what I'm doing, and to everybody else, like, oh, that's not something my sister would do. What are you doing? It's like, oh, well, it's going to make me smarter and healthier. And come up with all this stuff, or even use that for myself. Like, oh, this is out of character. So what am I doing with the Zen stuff? And then getting to the place where I can say, I can't explain it. It's just clear I'm doing what I should be doing. And I don't know why. And I can't tell you. But then it's another thing when my Zen teacher comes up and says, what are you doing?
When the Zen teacher comes up and says, what are you doing?
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Yeah, so I thought of that with this koan.
Exactly. Right.
You know, Jenny, you know, the explanation I think you're talking about is using words and phrases to come forward, but you coming forward as Jenny is the complete explanation of what you're doing. It's it. There's that saying, I think it was Emerson who said, you know, who you are speaks so loudly I can't hear what you're saying. That's it.
Yep. Right. But I want to hide, but I can't hide. So, yeah.
Fully exposed already before a word is spoken. And that might be true that, again, going back to the boxes we've been talked about, you know, some part of the mind thinks, so what is the Dharma box? And I need to be able to describe it and tell people where it is. And it's not that sort of thing, is it? Yeah. Thanks. Well,
thank you.
Brad.
Thank you, David, for the talk and everybody's contributions here. I'm remembering the archery story, and I had a big smile at him turning around and saying bullseye. I think that's important. I don't know if I need to figure it out, but it seems very permissive to me. Like this whole sesshin is a bullseye as big as the ocean.
Yeah. And we say in Zen, already accomplished. Mm-hmm. You know, that there's this way that we think when we evaluate ourselves, good or bad, right or wrong, I'm close to my goal, I'm not close to my goal. We miss the way that Zen practice transcends a kind of linear view of our lives, right? We're already, from the moment I first heard about Zen, before I heard about Zen, when I was just a fetus, something was activated. This is what David was talking about, bodhicitta. This is this mysterious energy that doesn't bring us to a place. It brings us home to where we've been the whole time. And we struggle against that because we have ideas about what should be and the way things are. But just trusting that, like it sounds like you're trusting right now in this moment, that's the whole thing. Coming home right here.
Right on target, Brad. Deb, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Thank you for the talk. You know, what really resonated for me was this wanting to be comfortable and avoiding uncomfortableness, and like, it feels like, oh, this is very important for me that, you know, it's all good. Something about how just seeing everything as good, you know, that I don't have to just seek the joy. And so anyway, that's what resonated for me. So thank you.
It makes me think you're pointing to a good beyond good, a bigger, more spacious, all-encompassing.
Yeah.
And I think that's the bullseye, right? What are you aiming for? I'm aiming for this, right? If we're aiming for this, then good work. But again, noticing how revolutionary or how upside down or how there's such an ingrained pattern of doing it some other way that we're not even aware of. So one, to see how that operates is so important. And then the kind of delight that you're expressing, and I heard in Brad too, what if this sesshin already a bullseye? Oh boy, that's a relief, because I was hoping to have a good sesshin. this discomfort, just fine.
Dad, we often talk about in Buddhism, emancipation. And in conventional sense, emancipation is freedom from something. But here, what we're talking about is freedom within. So to know that if every point on the journey is it, if everything, then we have the freedom to create a journey right on our cushion or wherever we are. And so whether we're comfortable or uncomfortable, that's it. And there's the freedom that lies within that.
Lovely. Maybe we'll do two more. So Craig, and then we'll do Beverly. So Craig.
Oh, I'm so appreciating the talk and all this dialogue. And what I'm considering is, the idea of curiosity, which I expressed and you did too, being open to whatever arises. And then the idea of intention, to have some, target I'm aiming at. I came in with a teacher's words in my head, to be a bodhisattva is to just show up as yourself. And I thought, I'm going to figure that out. And every time I would get that idea, it would just slip away like a slippery fish in my hand that I would go back to. Or, I could hear a lawnmower outside, or my feet hurt. And suddenly I'm thinking, well, showing up is just noticing what is that. Suddenly I'm hungry. That's who I am. I don't have to figure this out. My body.
And I think something about this intention to figure it out is both necessary and wrong at the same time. And I think that's what you're saying. So some kind of forward movement allows us to see that no movement is required, right? How do I do this? What could this be about? Like Jenny was saying, with this big smile on her face, how do I explain it, right? Oh, already explained, right? Sound of the lawnmower, now I'm hungry. This is how a bodhisattva shows up. Thanks. Beverly.
Thank you for your talk, David. I was not sure I wanted to say this, but there's a lot that came up during your talk. And it just reminded me so much of, for years, I mean, years and years and years, I don't know, 15, 20 or more. After a long time ago, I had left the church. I used to go back to churches just because I was so drawn to them. Mm-hmm. And so I'd make a big deal out of it. I'd go to the church and I'd go inside, and then almost every time I had this, like, what do I do now? Because I wasn't going to a service. I was just going there because I was drawn. Yeah. And this, what do I do now? And it was like a lost feeling, and I don't know. Mm-hmm. I would be there and I didn't know what to do. I knew I could have prayed. Yeah. I could have done many things. Yeah. But there is this deep sense of, and now what? What? Why did I come here? What's supposed to happen?
Right.
So your talk sort of connected me to that, like wandering and yeah.
Yeah, I think that and now what is a very important place that we enter into on the path. And these places that are full of bodhicitta churches and mosques and synagogues and temples, that they draw us in. It could be also the edge of the ocean and the waves. It could be, you know, a field of flowers. It could be the beautiful way that the wood floor is showing up. It doesn't matter what it is, but we get drawn into these places and to trust that and not have to explain it. And I think then asking and reaching something and then saying, and now what? Beautiful impetus for practice. I really appreciate those words. And, oh, because you could say them, and now what? You know, like exasperated. Oh, now what do I do? Okay. But it's more like, oh, it's more like Susan on the motorcycle, the little whatever moped. Everything is constantly changing and surprising. And so it's more like, and now what? Ready. I'm ready. I'm ready for whatever comes.
Well, and what I hear too is that sometimes we get to that place, and I think this is exactly what Melissa is saying, and think there must be something wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, if I was on some clear path, then I wouldn't. Mm. But how wonderful that you were just in such a wonderful place, and that I hope that, you know, we all get to that place where there's something, but we don't know. We're kind of at the end of our belief or the end of what we think we should do. And the teaching in Zen is, what do you do then? Nothing. Right? You just don't know. And the wonder of that place and the possibility and the courage it takes to stay there, because the mind wants to shut it down and say, well, okay, I should pray or I should do it. But no, what now? So let's all find out. We'll come back. We'll in a moment move into our walking practice, but we'll take a few more breaths in our Zen posture before we're guided into Kinin. Thank you, everyone.